Blog Talk Radio.
From the illegal exodus. To save us from Hillary Clinton and broadcasting from a small grass hut in Micronesia, Kelly O'Connell 606, 18th day, August. Well, I guess there was a little bit of rain yesterday up towards the Oregons, but fairly rain-free day, unfortunately. All right, so I've got Walt Rubel coming in the second hour. I've been going over these stories. There is nothing to touch. This incredible plan that the Donald has brought up for illegals. They have to go. This is the voice of, I won't call it the moral majority. I don't think it's necessarily religious, but it might include a lot of Christians. But this is the voice. The reason that Donald Trump is doing so well, in my opinion, is he is giving voice to the masses of Americans who are at the receiving end of political correctness, who are been just agonizing over watching the government not only allow unlimited numbers of foreigners flood the border, but then relocate them around the country and then give speeches saying things like, are we not our brother's keeper? Having Nancy Pelosi go to the border and telling these people, welcome Americans. This kind of insane leftism that reminds me of a famous line by an economist who said, if something cannot go on forever, it won't. So you cannot have forever unlimited access to the country by illegal immigrants, even if a certain amount of it we could survive. But there has to at some point obviously be a change in policy. Donald Trump is the first person that I've heard say not only does it have to stop, but they've got to be deported. It's shocking. It's breathtaking. Something that would have been a commonplace a couple of decades ago can't be stated anymore because of political correctness. Now, think about the people who are behind the movement of political correctness. If you treat that historically, you go back, it's this group of people they called the Frankfurt School that came out of Nazi Germany who were afraid that Hitler was going to try to kill them. And I'm sure he would have. They were communists. And communism and Nazism tried to occupy the same space. But these people came to America, they were academics, and they realized that there would be no revolution by the workers because people in America were for the most part happy with their lot. So they decided to try to take over the society through the education system, and they've almost done it, you know. So political correctness is not a movement that has grown up on its own, that is just human evolution or whatever. It is a specific number of topics and strategies, and this guy, what's his name, Rules for Radicals, Saul Alinsky, his type of thing, where you bring in these ideas, get kids to believe in them when they first get to school, like a religious movement, and then anybody that is opposed to them is excoriated, is driven out of society. Ultimately, that's the kind of society we have now. And are we better or worse off from it? I mean, I've talked to people who have minority status and say we've achieved so much. We really haven't. Having a colorblind society is or should be our goal, not a society that continues to lash out at people that it considers to be breaking these racist or sexist or homophobic or whatever the rule of the day is. But anyway, here's what Trump said that got a lot of media attention.
The executive order gets rescinded. One good thing
you'll
about...
You'll rescind that one too?
One good thing
you'll
about...
You'll rescind the DREAM Act executive
you're
order.
You're going to have to... We have to make a whole new set of standards. And when people come in, they have
so
to
you're
come in...
You're going to split up families.
Chuck,
you're going to deport children.
Chuck, no. We're going to keep the families together. We have to keep the families together.
But you're going
to
keep them together out.
But they have to go.
What if they...
We have to go. Chuck, and we either have a country or we don't have a country. The executive order gets rescinded. One good thing
you'll
about...
You'll rescind that one, too?
One good...
All right, so that is the statement that the shot was heard around the world. This is probably the greatest nightmare that the left has heard for decades since Reagan was in office. Am I saying Trump's the next Reagan? No. I mean, I have no idea what his administration would look like. What I will tell you, though, is that people are really sick of what's going on and they don't see an upside to it. People in America, I would say the vast majority of people don't see an upside in having a completely open border where even criminals can come and stay, where even when they find criminals that have a violent history, they're not deported. That's crazy. That's the kind of leftism that really just completely strangles the society. It be for whatever ideas it is driven by, which I won't bore you with. But all right, so here's another element of this plea. Mark Halperin, reporter for MSNBC, heard Iowans pleading to Trump, "Save us, you're the only one who can stop Hillary." Maybe that's what a lot of this is about.
I want to begin with you. You were the one following Donald Trump around a good bit in his magical mystery tour. You said this: most importantly of this weekend, we've reached a turning point with Trump. The major establishment campaigns of both parties now think Trump could win Iowa, and most of them think he could win the nomination, and a significant number think he could win the White House. This is a big change. It was all enough for you, of course, channeling Sophocles to say they were in, quote, full freakout mode. Take us through this weekend.
Well, look, Trump may not end up as the nominee, but right now he's changed the race. Not just leading in the Fox poll, but coming to the fair. I've been to the fair with Barack Obama at his peak, Sarah Palin at her peak, with other candidates, George Bush. Oh, the reception Trump got here was not just about celebrity. I walked with him for 45 minutes after the helicopter ride. He came to the fair, and people were yelling things to him with passion. Save us. You're the only one who can stop Hillary. Thank you for making America great again. The other campaigns, the other leading Republican campaigns, monitored Trump's behavior here. And that was part, along with the Fox poll and along with the developments of the last couple of weeks, of them saying, as you just quoted, they now believe Trump can win Iowa.
All right, so what happens if Trump – here's a question for you. If Trump wins, let's just say that worst-case scenario for the GOP leadership anyway, worst-case scenario for the left, what if Trump wins? What does his administration look like? What does his policies look like? How does the Senate and the House cooperate with him? We've already seen – that you can go for 7 years without involving the Senate or the House on your activities with President Obama. President Obama has occupied the White House as if there had been a coup, and he was going to dictate policy however he could. And so, I mean, what if Donald Trump? Is it right? Fight for be sincere and give his sincere policy application and to do things his way, to put it in a Frank Sinatra's terms. Actually, Paul Anka. But anyway, is that right? But if Trump did it, it's wrong. So many of these arguments that have been used to support Trump, Obama, if Trump gets into office and Trump does them, what are people going to say? I mean, after living through, hopefully surviving the Obama presidency, there are no standards left, are there? I mean, what is the standard? What standard has Obama gone by? Certainly not what the interest of the nation is, and certainly not by the rule of law, and certainly not by popular opinion. I mean, it seems like his administration has gone off the farthest left in instinct. So if Trump comes in and does it differently, who can criticize him? I'm just asking, you know? All right, we'll take a break here. 6:16. You're listening to AM Las Cruces and 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell. 523-1450 to call in. 805-6180 to text 805-6180. Got some juicy clips for you and some nice topics. We'll be right back. Thank you. It's 6:20, and the temperature right now is, let me get it for you in just a second here. I have a little app on my phone. Temperature is, according to the Weather Channel, 77 degrees. 101 is going to be the high, the low 69. All right, so there is this crazy clip out there that Hillary Clinton has put out. And I mean, let me ask you this. Are you a Frankie? And any person that the party puts up is good enough for you? Anybody that, you know, you love Hillary Clinton? You're just head over heels for Joe Biden? Think Al Gore is the greatest thing that ever walked the earth? Who else is out there? Yeah, the bench is pretty thin for the Democrats because so many of these state houses have been wiped out by the GOP wave. But are you a person that thinks that Hillary is God on earth? I mean, what are you going to do without her? Here's a clip from her that is just so surreal. If I had not asked for my emails, I'm having a hard time managing this clip here, but if I had not asked for my emails all to be made public, none of this would have been in the public arena. Are you insane? At some point, someone's going to bring up the fact, and really the FBI and NSA should have done it a long time ago, that you're using a private email server, which is not safe. It's not secure, and therefore everybody's going to know about these emails. The way she handled this, though, was spectacular. You've got to admit, this is a self-created disaster. No one asked her to make her own email server. It doesn't make any common sense. She just came up with this, and now it's one of the biggest scandals of her career. It is just like her husband. Check this out.
Would have been.
Is there another shoe to drop with the email?
No. And look, I understand why people are confused about this. It's a very confusing issue. I think there are just a couple of things people need to know, which is that, you know, I did what other secretaries of state had done. I was permitted to and used a personal email. And obviously, in retrospect, given all of the, you know, concerns that have been raised, would have been probably smarter not to, but I never sent nor received any classified email, nothing marked classified. And I think this will all sort itself out. And in a way, it's kind of a interesting insight into how the government operates, because if I had not asked for my emails all to be made public, none of this would have been in the public arena. But I want people to know what we did. I'm proud of the 4 years that I was Secretary of State. So I know this is all just going to, you know, work itself out as we go forward.
All right. Secretary Clinton, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today.
My pleasure. Good to talk to you.
This is classic Hillary speak, classic Clintonese. Nothing that was marked. What's the phrase of art there? Nothing that was marked high security or whatever, classified. The issue is the issue sending classified stuff, or whether she sent or opened an email that said classified. I mean, you know, if you're writing a book, if you're making a movie, you wouldn't put this in there. It was too unlikely. And Hillary says, listen to this. This is surreal. I did the same thing that every other Secretary of State has been allowed to do. No, by the way, no other Secretary of State in history bought their own server and put it in their house and used it to send all their government stuff on it. That's absurd. And then it's all going to sort out. I mean, what does that tell you? What does it tell people who want to support her of her decision making that she came up with this, or her husband, some some aide said, why don't you put this all on private email? And she said, yes, that's a good idea. Further, when she says, I asked for all my emails to be made public, she deleted half of them before she handed them over. Whatever number of emails she hands over. They've only looked at a few emails, apparently, so far, and found already classified information. And this is so crazy. Then she scrubs the server, the hard disk that this stuff was on, and hands it in. But of course, she asked for it all to be public. I mean, this is just, how can the Democrats live with this? Anyway, here is Newt Gingrich saying what I said. She can't be the nominee.
Hillary Clinton, what is it about them? Former House Speaker Newt Gingrich joins us. Good evening, Mr. Speaker. What is it about? They are stealing the show, both of them.
Well, I mean, in Hillary's case, it is a lifetime of hard work, and she became First Lady. She became a senator. She became Secretary of State. In Trump's case, he's just Trump. I mean, he is the biggest communicator of earned media, maybe in American political history. It's unbelievable.
Well, where does it stop? Is it, I mean, we're going to hit some plateau for Donald Trump, or is he just going to keep rolling?
Well, I mean, the other candidates have to face the reality that if he stays at 25 or better, he wins. You have 15 or 17 candidates, and one of them has 25%, they keep winning. And so somebody's going to have to, sooner or later, take him head on. And so far, the people who have tried to take him head on haven't done very well.
Well, every time you take him on, he just rolls right over you. Like he comes like a, you know, he comes like a Mack truck.
It's like a science fiction film where you shoot at him and he gets bigger. And you're trying to figure out maybe oxygen will poison him or something. But it's literally, you know, you're dealing with somebody who is totally different from anybody in modern politics.
All right, well, today he has he was at the New York courthouse. In New York, he arrived for jury duty. In fact, we have a poll to put up there, and this is a chance for our viewers at home. This is your chance to vote on Twitter. Would you put Donald Trump on a jury? Tweet yes or tweet no using hashtag Gret, and we'll show you our live votes on the air. What do you make of his arrival?
Well, again, he is a phenomenon. He is, in a sense, he doesn't have to be anything else. He doesn't have to hire any PR firm. Wherever he goes, you're going to show up, you, the media. He's now gotten to that stage where it becomes sort of reinforcing.
Is Secretary Clinton going to be the Democratic nominee?
I don't think so. I think they're probably going to find a minimum of 1,500 emails that involve the security of national security issues. I think there's some evidence now they may find the rest. All the things she deleted may, in fact, be on a backup server.
Is that the death knell of her campaign?
Well, it's just part of an attrition process. I mean, when you have somebody who makes jokes about Snapchat when she, in fact, is guilty of having erased what Bob Woodward has now said is at least the equivalent of Nixon and Watergate, she doesn't have any common sense about dealing with this stuff.
So who steps in? Who's the Democratic nominee? I realize we're way out from that point, but
well,
what's your prediction?
Well, first of all, I wrote a column the other day and said Democrats need to worry about Sanders because if he keeps running and he keeps gaining momentum and he keeps gaining supporters, there is a morning where he, in fact, becomes genuinely formidable. And this is a party which likes socialism. It's a party which likes his very dovish foreign policy. And I don't think it's impossible to imagine Sanders ending up as the Democratic nominee.
Is that the nominee the Republicans want to run against? They want to run against Hillary Clinton, or they want to run against Bernie Sanders or somebody else? We're about Biden or Kerry or O'Malley. I mean, there are other people in there. Who's the candidate the Republicans fear the most?
Who they fear the most?
Right.
Unknown.
Unknown?
I mean, some person who emerges out of all this mess. I mean, Bloomberg, if he shifts, Jerry Brown. You just don't know. Elizabeth Warren.
Well, listen to that. I mean, you've got the ground is shifting under the feet of the Democrats so fast. Now, here, if you're a politician and you're running against Donald Trump, there's a few things you're jealous of. Number one, obviously, he has pre-election fame, number one. Number two, he's seen as a businessman. At some level, he's seen as a serious person. Number three, you've got to be jealous that you can stand up and say what you really think or believe and people respond to it. I mean, all of these GOP candidates, every single one of them is terrified, was terrified. It was the third rail. You couldn't touch immigration, illegal immigration or any other. No matter how bad it is in the country, think about that. the kind of leadership the GOP offers is no matter how bad something is, you can't really go after it because you're afraid. Now, Sanders, are Americans really going to vote for a socialist? I say no. I mean, as far as to seed as this country has gone, there is a core of people that understand that socialism is poison. It's economic and democratic poison. I mean, it's the way that you destroy a country is to apply socialism. And a lot of people understand that, especially older Americans who've been through the Cold War and everything. All right, let's take a break here. And let me just ask, for the sake of it, why wouldn't you vote for Trump, all other things being equal? There might be people in the GOP that are much better than Trump, but they're not distinguishing themselves. The Democratic field is depleted. Hillary Clinton is like, she's like some reanimated corpse. She's so crazy. She's so crazy and gets up and says counterfactual stuff that anybody in the situation immediately knows or considers to be a lie. And yet the party doesn't want her to have any debates because they want her to go in as the front runner. I would say that, you know, both of these parties are totally sold out to the wrong things. Anyway, 6:32, Kelly O'Connell, we will be back. Hey, it's Kelly.
Kelly, hi. Lydia Webster calling.
Hey, what's up?
I have an update on the rally today about defunding Planned Parenthood.
Oh, okay. Lydia, can I put you on hold and we'll bring it on live?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
It's 6:36, and we have Lydia here. Lydia, thank you for calling up to give us an update on your Planned Parenthood rally.
Yeah, Kelly, we found out that Planned Parenthood's coming to Las Cruces, and so the rally today, which is at 11 a.m. in front of City Hall, we are asking, you know, the government to stop funding Planned Parenthood, but it's come close to home. It's personal now because we found out that this summer Planned Parenthood was training volunteers here in Las Cruces, and then they had a town hall early in August to try to bring, you know, more and better access to basically to abortion.
Well, yeah, I mean, do you agree when some people have said abortion is this generation's slavery battle?
Yes. I think 100 years from now, young people will just be dumbfounded to see what we've been doing to the preborn, you know, just killing our preborn children.
It's absolutely crazy. Well, okay, so where's the next rally?
It's at 11 a.m. in front of City Hall today. It's a lunch hour rally, and we're going to have Father Stephen Imbarato from Priests for Life. And then at 6 p.m. in front of the current abortion clinic on Loman by Dion. So we're going to have a prayer vigil. So it's 11 a.m. in front of City Hall, 6 p.m. By Dion's on Loman. And then we did ask people to go to lascrucesforlife.org and sign a petition if you are interested in keeping Planned Parenthood from opening up an abortion facility in Las Cruces.
Well, I mean, you know, Planned Parenthood is just, it's just, I mean, from an economic standpoint, abortion is crazy. I mean, the argument for bringing illegals into the country would evaporate if we would just have a natural childbirth rate here. But also, it's evil. I mean,
yeah.
Since nobody knows on the left when life starts, it's better, it's easier to, it's safer to assume it starts at conception. But I mean, I just, you know, this whole thing, this whole, it's an entire industry based on aborting, you know, killing babies. I mean, it's just, and they're the most self-righteous people in history, you know?
I know. I do believe they mean well, many of them, most of them probably. And I just feel
Why?
There's terrible blindness.
Well, how can you assume somebody who's killing other people means well?
Yeah, it's a mystery. And I'm a post-abortive woman myself. Back in 1973, I was just, I am so sad that I did that, but I feel I would like to help other women.
No, I understand.
Making that mistake.
The place that it's happening is today in front of City Hall?
Yes, and it's 11 to 11:45, and then at 6 p.m., 3900 East Loman by Dion's, there's going to be a prayer vigil.
Okay.
So come to one or both.
Okay.
And then on Saturday, there's an all-day protest in front of the library at Albert Johnson Park.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Is there a phone number connected to the group? Go ahead and give that.
It's 313-2277, and that's Mark.
313-2277. Okay, thank you, Lydia. Have a good day. All right, folks. Abortion is, I mean, after I wrote this article, The Economic Impact of Abortion, which I had never seen anybody tackle before, and I was just curious, I just realized how, economically speaking, how stupid it is. You know, a country gets stronger by bringing in more people. That's why China has an advantage on us in some ways. So, all right. All right. Getting back to what we were talking about. Do you think 523-1450 Hillary is going to make it? I realize, Frankie, you're just waking up right now, and you were up all night counting your stock options. But I'm just curious if you guys think that that she's going to make it. I don't see. Doesn't there have to be an investigation into the emails that comes to some conclusion anyway? Trump is saying, and I can't get this thing to load, but Trump is saying it would be a miracle if Hillary continued to run. And I think that is true, that she's got a lot of distractions. Now, here is something that I thought was interesting. There's true panic. The higher up you go, the more panic there is in the Democratic Party over the Hillary situation. Here's a little bit from Morning Joe.
Poll. This shows a 70-something-year-old socialist 7 points ahead of the front runner who's supposed to walk away with it. That's obviously going to create a void. Is Al Gore the guy that's going to fill that void?
I have a feeling it's not Al Gore, that Al Gore is not going to run. I think between the Gore and Biden noise we're hearing right now, there's more substance behind Biden right now. I think the moves he's making are pretty real, and I'm still doubtful he'll get in. But I think you combine those two things, the Biden talk, the Gore talk, and what that speaks to is what's happened on the Democratic side. A year ago, 2 years ago, we've never seen this before really in either party. The entire party looked at Hillary Clinton and said, it's not even worth putting up a fight. She has such overpowering strength within this party. You know, Amy Klobuchar, I'm not going to run. Kristen Gillibrand, I'm not going to run. Nobody's going to challenge
her. Which is, by the way, what everybody was saying about George H.W. Bush in 1991, except a guy named Clinton.
Yeah, well, things change in a year, too. That's the other thing. You know, the economy comes down. So here we are a year later. Nobody got in, really, except a 73-year-old socialist from Vermont. He's leading her in New Hampshire. And so if you're a Democrat and you're getting nervous, you're saying, look, it's not going to be Bernie Sanders who beats her for the nomination. Right. At this point, to get in and take advantage of this, has to have stature.
Right.
When you come to Biden, you come to Gore. I don't know too many other names out there.
What about Kerry?
Kerry, then the question is, you know, so he's what, 73, 74 years old. He's a defeated presidential candidate, and, you know, couldn't win in 2004, so he's got some baggage.
So is Nixon.
I've seen the name mentioned. I think you got to go through these guys first. You got to go through Biden first. You got to go through Gore first. If you get a no, and if Hillary's still vulnerable and there's still this thirst, then you might see more Kerry.
Steve, you followed a lot of these stories, Hillary and the email service.
All right, so let's face it. I mean, there is it is dark days for the DNC, for the Democratic Party right now, because they chose someone very early who has got tremendous downside. She's twice as unpopular as she is popular, believe it or not. And we've got another phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Tom. Do you have that clip where she says she wishes she had Snap or something, that a thing that drops the information?
No. I heard it was really crazy.
She has a clip where she says that.
I'll find it. Well,
there's another thing happening today in Cruces at a college. I forgot. It just came over the air. El Paso Electric is going to increase the rates quite high. They're going to have some sort of a thing at a college, if you can find out about that too.
Well, we did a whole 2-hour show on the rate hike and the other stuff going on. So
I can say something.
All right. Okay. Let me see what I can find out. Maybe Walt knows.
All right.
Thanks, Tom. Folks, let's take a quick break here. I'll look for that clip from a Snapchat or whatever the heck it is. Kelly O'Connell, 6:45. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. We want to thank the Samuel Cain Law Firm for sponsoring the show. 526-5263. In pain, call Cain. He'll give you a free consultation and let you know if your pain has dollar signs attached to it. We'll be right back.
On AM 1450 KOBE.
In today's weather forecast, mostly sunny skies. It's going to be a hot one with a high of 101 today. Light winds out of the west this afternoon. 10% chance for isolated showers and thunderstorms. Going into tonight, partly cloudy skies are in the forecast. Low will dip down to 72 overnight. Again, a 10% chance for some isolated showers and thunderstorms before midnight. The weather forecast is brought to you by Outer Limits Car Wash, featuring unlimited monthly car washes and free vacuums. 2821 North Tell Shore.
From the Nixon era of the 1970s, a ban on American oil exports was imposed. Nixon, like many in the country, believed that we were running out of oil. We didn't run out. Fast forward to 2015. With the miracle of horizontal drilling technology, we discovered vast new resources in America. So much that we have outpaced U.S. sweet crude refining capacity. We must export, create jobs, strengthen our national security, and help ourselves and our allies not be dependent on OPEC and Russia. Plus, keep the price of gasoline and energy low right here in the U.S. It's not the 70s anymore. It's time to lift the export ban. We have the oil. We have the means. We simply need to act. Contact your representative today or visit lifttheexportban.com. Paid for by Heartland Principles.
Walgreens has a question. Where do you go when you need a few groceries, but not the grocery store wait? Like, there's no way I'm standing in line for an hour in the grocery store line just to pick up milk. Wait. Walgreens also has an answer. It's us. We'll get you in and out fast with grocery essentials like milk, snacks, and paper towels. Walgreens, at the corner of happy and healthy.
Now with card, vitamin water is 3 for $3 or $1.49 each, and Snickers fun size bags are 2 for $5 with in-store coupon or $3.49 each.
Only the Home Depot has Glidden Professional Ultra High 220 paint in 3 formulas for faster dry time, easier application, and better wet high. But how does it stand up to professional painters? Glidden Professional Ultra High 220 makes for faster, easier paint jobs. So it's proving to be a great paint for a very tough craft. Let's do this. Glidden Professional Ultra High 220 paint. Only at the Home Depot. More safe. More do it. U.S. only. Store for details.
This is AM Las Cruces,
on AM 1450. Kelly O'Connell has it covered.
All right, so looking for this clip on Snapchat. I found it. I found it, but somebody had made it sound like the chipmunks. So here's a little clip that promises to be her Snapchat joke.
Clinton couldn't help but river competition and laugh at her own controversies during a Democratic fundraiser dinner Friday night in Iowa. In a packed ballroom for a wingding dinner event, the Democratic presidential candidate touched on the scandal surrounding her use of a private server to send emails when she was Secretary of State. Clinton agreed this week to turn over her personal email server and a thumb drive that contains work-related emails to the Justice Department as a part of an investigation. She said, "You may have seen that I recently launched a Snapchat account. I love it. I love it. Those messages disappear all by themselves." Social media posts are known for disappearing within about 10 seconds after a user views them.
All right, so not actually the words out of the horse's mouth, but not that Hillary looks like a horse. She doesn't look quite that good. But so do you think that Hillary Clinton's going to make it? I've got a great article by Chris Saliza, and we'll take take one last break here, and I'll come back and read you a little bit of it. But and I think I've got the clip. But anyway, really fantastic. Well, let me just give you the outline of it here right now. Chris Saliza, who's a political writer, he's writing for the Washington Post, says it's too late to start over. Dear Democrats, it's too late to start over. There's no replacing Hillary Clinton as your party's front runner. And then he goes into why. He says this may come as a shock to some of you. After all, you argue it's only August. The Iowa caucuses won't be until February. But modern politics isn't as simple as announcing you've decided to run and watching yourself soar to the top of the polls. And so she says. Then he says, let's take Biden, for example. If he decides at the end of this month that he wants to run, he immediately begins in a $45 million hole or more against Clinton. Super PACs can stop, kind of make up for some of that. But Hillary doubles or triples what he can raise. Organizationally, Biden is further behind because Hillary has already got all of the best talent around the country to sign up for her. And so she would be playing for second and third fiddle in every state because people want to be with a winner. And then he says, look at the example of Rick Perry. He never recovered from coming in late. He wasn't ready. And anybody who gets in late now is going to be in the same place. And so... so anyway, the point of the article is, like her or hate her, you're in a position like what Frankie is saying, is that she's going to be our lady, and you're going to have to live with her. Now, I don't think she's going to make it to the nomination, but then you're going to have to put your stock into one of the people that is behind her. I don't think that Sanders is a serious candidate for the reasons I mentioned, but is O'Malley? I mean, O'Malley seems like the best shot right now. Anyway. 652, you're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. This is Kelly O'Connell. 523-1450, 805-6180. Call in and tell me who you think the Democratic candidate's going to be. This idea of finding and deporting illegal aliens has really taken the country by storm, or shaken it to its core. And you've got other billionaires that are attacking Trump, saying that it would destroy our society, round up most of the illegals and deport them. If so, what would the effect be? It's hard to even imagine that, because for years we've acted like once you got into this country and got established, that's it. And we've assumed that. We've assumed every politician would this is a shibboleth. This is one of these politically correct ideas that everybody has to bow down to. And now Trump is not bowing down to it. What does it mean? All right. I've got an article that I'm looking for any other headlines that you might find interesting. Oh, well, here's this thing from Hillary. This is an amazing joke, to if you consider the fact that she's right in the middle of this scandal.
Oh, by the way, you may have seen that I recently launched a Snapchat account. I love it. I love it. Those messages disappear all by themselves. Well, by the way, you may have seen that I recently launched a Snapchat account. I love it. I love it. Those messages disappear all by themselves.
I mean, I'm listening to this. I'm wondering, did she had a brain injury, right? If you've heard of TBI, traumatic brain injury, there's certain effects. But I really wonder, she is just doing and saying crazy things, and I just wonder if maybe, you know. All right, so I had this other article that I wanted to mention to you that is just absolutely excellent, The Tragic and Complete Collapse of Racial Relations. I wanted to ask you about it. We're kind of running short on time now. Victor Davis Hanson, he's got this blog called Works and Days, which is the title of a very famous – he's a classicist. It's a title of a very famous set of works out of ancient Greece. But anyway, he's talking about how the racial interactions in America haven't gotten better. They've gotten worse, and that when Barack went into power, 60% of Americans, I got to find anyway, it went from like 40% of Americans were feeling that race was bad. The racial relations were bad. Now it's like 60%. It's shocking because one of the reasons that people wanted to elect Barack, I believe, was to heal this kind of ancient racial sin, this ancient racial divide. And we do have a last minute call here. Thanks for the call to Kelly. Come show this. Mike, what's up? Quickly.
Hey, Kelly, do you think Miss Weiner helped Hillary wipe her server?
Gosh, Mike, please. I've asked you, why do I have to ask people things time and time again? I ask you not to call up with dogs baying in your ear. I mean, is that too hard of a request? You know, don't continue to talk like a robot when I'm trying to interact with you, for example. Don't shout over me. Anyway, we'll take a little break here. And to sum it up, racial relations worse than they were when the president came in. But the question is why. The people on the right are going to say it's because the president is a race baiter and his party, his people. People on the left are going to say he merely exposed all the racism that's hidden in the society. Anyway, take a little break here and we'll be back with Walt Rubel. So, I mean, there is something called classical economics that I think is interesting. Thomas Sowell wrote a book on it. Thomas Sowell's education is in economics, I think, originally. But it is an interesting idea. But I think you'd have to be very careful, you know, applying some of this stuff. I think Reagan came in with some of these. He's like, you know, people don't realize that Reagan was kind of evolving up until and after he went into office with his, you know, he was a very open-minded person. So we, you know, yeah, he's not on a national level. but I don't know if you heard any of the show, but do you think, what do you think Hillary's chances?
You know, the last time she got better,
yeah.
Maybe she
does that. Doesn't she get worse right now? Oh, I couldn't believe it. That would be like Jeffrey Dahmer getting up in, at the prison commissary making cannibal jokes.
It is, but it's possible.
Yeah, don't sweat it, you know, to those faithful. Who do you think, if she doesn't make it, do you think there's a reasonable chance she's not going to be in? I don't see, it seems it's a true dilemma. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the age we're living in. Race and sex is huge in people's voting opinions. Well, I mean, there was a time when it was just men. Yeah, Jewish guy back east. You know, what I would kind of wonder is if Michael Bloomberg was not... Michael Bloomberg is so ambitious, but isn't he tempted to come and get in the race? Like, he's in England trying to get in politics over there.
But if Bernie Sanders...
Well, I'm saying he would come in as a Democrat, in my opinion.
Yeah,
he would have to. I mean, he's a natural Democrat.
I don't know. I mean, I think he'd have to put up his nose to think stuff about, you know,
his operational. Yeah. It's kind of
nanny state. Yeah, I think there's nothing like that at all.
What do you want to talk about? Do you want to talk local and state? Let's talk about it. What is her name? And what happened?
She was driving 100 miles an hour the wrong way.
Is not making the DA look good, huh? Well, good morning, 7:06, and it is the 18th of August, and we're lucky and thrilled to have Walt Rubel here. And good morning, Walt. How's
good
it
morning.
Going?
Yeah, it's great.
I understand you might be taking a little time off.
Yeah.
Heading east to see some friends out in Kansas City. All right. Is it a mecca of jazz?
It is. It's a mecca of jazz and barbecue and blues and baseball.
Wow.
And I hope to take in a little of all that.
Wow, that sounds fantastic. Would you encourage anybody else to go there for a vacation?
I would. It's a little sticky this time of year. But, you know, I mean, if you can deal with Las Cruces summers, you can deal with Kansas City summers.
I certainly hope so. So
a lot to see and do out there.
The Kansas City in the history of jazz is a big deal.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They also have what I am looking forward to, the Negro Baseball Hall of Fame. I had a chance to meet Buck O'Neill, one of the legendary players, when I was working out in Kansas a while back and sort of did some studying into the history of that. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it.
Very nice. Very nice. And how long are you going to be gone?
Oh, just a few days. Zip out, see some friends, and come on back.
Oh, a road trip.
Yep.
That sounds good. How many miles?
Oh,
1,000?
Oh, yeah, over 1,000.
1,500?
No, not much over 1,000.
Well, that's a good day's drive.
Yeah.
Is there a particular hotel chain you stay at?
Motel 6.
Okay, so what's going on in the city?
Well, of course, the thing I think most folks were talking about was the death of Jim Bradley, the legendary Mayfield football coach. probably people get mad at us at the Sun News for paying too much attention to football and not enough to academics. And I get that, but it's not a zero sum gain. I mean, you can pay attention to both. And the fact is that when Mayfield plays Cruces on a year when both teams are playing well, 20,000 people come out to the stadium. Now, there aren't a lot of events in Las Cruces that attract 20,000 people. And so it is a huge deal. And it is a huge source of pride for a lot of people in this community that year after year, one or the other of those two teams, and sometimes both of them, are playing in the state championship game.
That's amazing.
It really is. I mean, we're going up against teams from bigger schools that are better funded up in Albuquerque. And a lot of times in Albuquerque, the championship game is played because of this screwy way that the Activities Association does it. But there is no team in the state that can come close, if you look for the last 10, 15 years, to the dominance that Mayfield and Las Cruces have had. And that all started with Jim Bradley. And it takes me back to my days. I started out as a sports reporter, and so I spent a lot of time covering high school football. And there is a real bond that is formed that if you haven't been through it, I think it's just hard to understand.
Do you think high school might make more of an impression on, you know, they talk about the game in college and professional, but it's pure at the high school level and it's more about team spirit and everything, right?
And character development. I really do believe that. That's not to say that isn't happening at the college level, but Doug Martin's job is to win football games. At high school, your job is more than that. It really is. I mean, they are trying to build citizens, to build responsible young men. And Jim Bradley, you talk to person after person after person who played for him, and they talk about not the wins and losses. I mean, yeah, that's the fun stuff to remember, but they talk about the impact that he had on their lives. And that's why I think we've seen, you know, this outpouring of support. The memorial service was yesterday, and it was, of course, an overflow crowd. And I didn't have a chance to attend, but I talked to a few people who did, and a very moving ceremony. And so, I think we lost one of our real legends.
How old was he?
82, I believe. And he had been sick for a while. He held on there for a long time. His son Michael took over, and he was an assistant coach for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And even after he couldn't do that, he was still on the sideline. So, I mean, you know, he was part of Mayfield football till the end, and it was a beautiful thing, really.
Well, that's too bad. All right, so you had mentioned something, and I see an article here, Walt Rubel, dismissal of charges feels like an injustice. I've got to ask you about this because – it's a big story around town.
Yeah, that was my column from last week, and it was this is a story that we've gotten more sound off calls, more letters. People are outraged, and I understand it. It's a story of Jasmine Miller, who by all evidence was driving very fast in an intoxicated state the wrong way down the road, ran into a car, a family of three. Nobody died. By good fortune, but the family was badly injured and remains injured to this day. She was found mentally incompetent to stand trial. She had said some crazy things to the law enforcement authorities at the time of her arrest. And what that means is that you have to have a certain level of mental competence in order to even get to the starting line, in order to even, you know, for the trial to begin. The defendant has to be able, and you can probably explain this better than I can, but to be able to assist in their defense at some kind of competent level. And she was found unable to do that.
Right. And if someone was truly insane, there's different standards. There's the McNaughton standard, and there's other standards that are kind of classics. But if a person is truly insane, then there's two parts of the traditional common law. Mens rea, actus rea, mental decision making, and then the action that's associated with it. And if you're insane, your mind is not capable of being held accountable for your actions.
Yeah. So But I think both, correct me if I'm wrong, I think both of those are when you get to the trial phase, and she didn't even get there. And that may be a little bit unique to New Mexico law. I'm not sure. What is, I think, unique and pathetic is the fact that we have our mental health facilities in this state are so underfunded and overwhelmed that we have no way to take care of a person like her. And so I was sitting in a legislative meeting a couple of weeks ago where Chris Barella, the head of the detention center, says they end up with us. They're in the county jail, and it becomes our job to try to give them the mental health care they need to gain competency in a mm-hmm. county jail.
Mm-hmm.
That makes no sense at all.
Well, and it's I've heard people say that this is the worst state in the nation in terms of caring for the mentally ill. Now, with the number of people that we have, and I used to be involved in advocacy for the mentally ill at Mesilla and in Memorial, there's supposed to be, we have 150 beds for our population. We're supposed to have 1,500.
Yeah, that sounds right. So at any rate, this comes to a hearing last week, and it comes before Judge Martin, and the charges against her was dismissed. She is still has never been found competent to stand trial, and so then the question became: is she still a danger to the community? And to me, how many times do you have to drive 100 miles an hour, all hopped up the wrong way? Before you don't have, I mean, if I can be assured that she will never be behind the wheel of a car again, then maybe I'm okay with that. I'm not sure, but I don't know if I can be assured of that. At any point, the judge found that she was not a danger to the community, and so she gets to go. And I after I wrote my column, I heard from Matt Madrid, who was her attorney. And what he told me was that the prosecutors during this hearing presented no evidence at all as to is she still a danger to the community, which according to him was the only thing the judge was allowed to consider. Instead, the prosecutors put on all of this testimony from the family about how injured they were and how that affected their lives,
yeah,
and ginned up all this sympathy in the community, and rightfully so, but didn't address the point. And so according to Matt Madrid, who, you know, granted is her attorney, but according to him, Judge Martin made the only ruling he could, but he is now getting killed in terms of comments to the newspaper.
I found that Matt Madrid's a straight shooter.
I have no reason. I wasn't there, but I have no reason to dispute that. And certainly that comports with our reporting. All of our reporting on the witnesses presented by the prosecution was the family. So,
New Mexico uses the McNaughton rule, and I'll explain that when we come back. But we're with Walt Rubel. We're talking about a case that was in the media and is still in the media.
Yeah, yeah. It, unfortunately, I think it's been resolved, but boy, people are riled up, and I get it.
Okay, we'll take a little break here. 716 AM Las Cruces with on 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell. 523-1450 to call in. If you know anything about this case, if you want to comment on it, 523-1450, 805-6180, 805-6180 to text. We will be right back. AM Las Cruces, 1450. So we're talking about this case with Jasmine Miller, and just in case you're interested, New Mexico combines the McNaughton rule with the irresistible impulse test. Now, the McNaughton rule, and this is taken from Legal Dictionary, online Legal Dictionary, the McNaughton rule is a test for criminal insanity, and I was just reading another article that said insanity is a legal, not a clinical concept, which is kind of interesting. Under the McNaughton rule, a criminal defendant is not guilty by reason of insanity if, at the time of the alleged criminal act, the defendant was so deranged that she did not know the nature or quality of her actions. or if she knew the nature and quality of her action, she was so deranged that she did not know what she was doing was wrong. And the aim of the McNaughton rule was to limit the insanity defense to cognitive insanity, a basic inability to distinguish right from wrong. Now, that's okay. That's a foundation right there. And then the irresistible impulse is, this is from Cornell University Law School. Cornell has this fantastic website with a lot of information on it. Irresistible impulse, one formulation of the insanity defense is the irresistible impulse. And under this test, the defendant will be found not guilty by reason of insanity if they can show that as a result of mental disease or defect, they could not resist the impulse to commit the crime of which they are accused due to an inability to control their actions. So, and you might say, well, what's the difference between the two? And the one is you can't differentiate. And the second one is you can't, I guess, basically stop yourself. So I have not studied this case.
Yeah, and you know, I have to admit that I'm very torn. I mean, I don't want to be putting crazy people into jail. I want to be giving crazy people help, and I'm not even sure I should be calling them crazy if we're talking political correctness.
Call them crazy because we're trying to get away from
political
correctness.
That's right.
And as long, I think, I heard the opposite of this on kind of a hip-hop show, but I believe if a person's intentions are not to malign other people, we should give them a little bit of space on this PC code.
Yes,
you know?
Yes. Yeah. No.
So anyway, I have not studied this case, and I might give Matt a call and try to pick his brain on it. But it sounds to you like the judge's hands were tied from the get-go.
It does. My understanding is that he made the only legal ruling he could have made. But as I've covered enough trials to know that sometimes judges make political rulings and figure it'll get appealed and that's fine. But I'm not going to be the one who sets her free.
According to the theory of political realism, or pardon me, legal realism, law exists within the society which gives birth to it. And politics is always part of the decision making. But, you know, Judge Martin is a smart guy. He came out of a highly regarded legal family in town. And I would think that if he made a decision like that, he had a good reason to do so.
I think so. And I think the fact that once you've run once in a contested race, judges only have to stand for retention. And, you know, usually voters have short memories and usually retention is a rubber stamp. And so you can make unpopular decisions that are correct.
Now, what do you think would have been would have appeased people's anger in this situation?
To have her stand trial and if the facts warrant, have her found guilty.
What do we know about this young woman, her history?
Well, that's the thing is that apparently she doesn't have a criminal history, and certainly that factored into it as well. So the question becomes, the question for me at least is, was this an intentional act and how much control over that did she have? And like I said, maybe if I can be absolutely assured that she can never get behind the wheel again, you know, maybe that is some level of justice. I don't know. But the phrase that keeps coming up over and over again as people call in and comment on this is scot-free. She gets to get off scot-free.
And so if she's insane, is she now in Las Vegas?
No, because she was found incompetent to stand trial, not a danger to the community. I mean, that was what this whole thing was about. And so, no, she's free. She, other than the consequences to her driving record, I believe there are no legal consequences at all for really causing tremendous pain and suffering to a family of three.
The crash, I'm looking at the pictures of the cars, is absolutely a jaw dropping.
Yeah.
And so one of the ways that it could have been handled, I guess, is it could have been, in theory, she could have stood trial and the court could have decided if she had done the act that she was charged with. And then as part of the phase of the trial, if she's found guilty, the next phase is sentencing. The insanity would go to the sentencing.
Once again, I don't know.
I don't know anything about this case, and I couldn't I couldn't really even comment on it. I'm going to have to do some research on it.
Yeah, I know a little bit about the case, but not nearly enough about the law. So,
but here's one question that I would have. If she's truly in so insane she cannot be held responsible for her actions, why is she out on the street?
The question everybody has. The answer is that I don't know. Well, the legal answer is that she is mentally incapacitated enough that she cannot stand trial. She cannot assist in her defense, but she can function in society. She can do everything, I hope, except drive. And I don't know the woman at all, and so I can't comment at all in terms of, you know, I've never met her. I don't know what her level or functioning ability is at all. I just know about this horrible act that she was involved with.
All right, so you've got this event happened when?
Oh,
2014.
Yeah, thank you.
And it was in December 2014?
That sounds right. Yeah.
So maybe 8 months ago?
Yeah, right.
All right. And
the husband hasn't been able to work since. They're still, you know, having medical treatment. I mean, they're still banged up.
All right. So she was on Sonoma Ranch Boulevard, and she was going over 100 miles an hour. And after the wreck, she told a doctor that she wanted to be free and break the speed of sound.
Yeah.
Doctor,
right. I said law enforcement. She said that to a doctor. But, yes. So what else do you make of that? It seems intentional, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, so she's charged with a DWI, which is once again not a defense. I'm just going to have to.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm throwing this at you, and you hadn't heard anything about it.
No, that's fine.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk to Matt Madrid and see what he says about it, and get his take on the legal rationale of behind the decision.
I do think it's an interesting case, and I like writing about things that tear me both ways, that I don't see as absolutely black
and
white.
It seems like here would be my concern is if she's obviously she enjoys driving and she enjoys driving and wants to break the speed of sound. Mm. She enjoys driving
on Sonoma Ranch Boulevard
at high speed. How would you keep her out of a car at this point?
That's my question.
I mean, if she's insane, how would you stop her from driving again?
Right.
And generally speaking, if she would do that in a car, doesn't that make her generally unfit to interact with other people? I'm just curious.
No, all very good questions. And I would love to hear you talk with Matt, because I'm sure he has good answers for all of them.
Well, I don't think I'll be able to get him on the show, but
if he'll talk to you off the air and explain it.
Well, he'll talk to me, but you know, generally, well, I have a general rule: unless people tell me I can talk about something on the air, I don't. But in any event,
I understand.
You know how it is.
No, I do.
But the cars are just absolutely mangled. I mean, it's a miracle anybody lived.
Well, yeah, she was driving the wrong way at 100 miles an hour in a head-on crash at Sonoma Ranch Boulevard.
All right, so a phone call came in about the wreck from Vicky Martin, wife of New Mexico State head football coach Doug Martin. Vicky Martin said she was running on the Sonoma Ranch multi-use path near the intersection of Sonoma Ranch and La Camellia Drive when she noticed the Sonata driving on the wrong side of the road. And then she says, I've never seen a car go that fast. It looked like she had a death wish.
Right. I think she did. And she wanted to take other people out with her, I think.
She was going three times the speed limit in a 35 almost, three times.
Yeah. No, I think that's, you know, you've heard of suicide by cop. I think that's, you know, suicide by crash. Or intended suicide by crash.
Wow, that is crazy.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
And another person, Jason Sierras, said she barely missed us.
Yeah.
She was going so fast she was making a dust trail on Sonoma Ranch.
No, I mean, like I said at the beginning, I think it's just good fortune or whatever you want to call it, that nobody died.
And then he saw, Sierra saw her make a U-turn at golf club. He saw her, the Sonata then sideswipe a GMC Envoy in the left lane. No brakes, nothing, didn't even try to stop. The Sonata then hit another vehicle before crashing into the car carrying the man, woman, and the chauffeur. So, was that attempted murder?
Well, I don't question. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it. I think she wanted to kill herself, and I think she wanted to. I think she had indifference towards the other people, is what I think. So I don't know. Is that?
Well, here's a level of that you'd never really hear people use this term, but there is a level in the law for if you kill someone, depraved heart murder.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Like if you went downtown and got a 30-06 and just started firing it off in random directions.
Right, right.
Not caring if you hit anybody. Right. That would be a depraved heart murder.
This sounds like the same thing to me.
Yeah, because you don't have any concern or don't pay any notice of what your actions would do. Okay, folks, here with Walt Rubel talking about a very interesting case that I need to get a little education on and that went through Judge Martin's court, and apparently there, what would you say the people's reaction is?
The firestorm, I think, is the word that comes to mind.
And when was this case decided?
Last week.
Yeah. All right. So, well, if you're a judge, you can take the heat, you know?
That's part of the job. That's right.
Okay, we'll take a little break here. And you're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, 805-6180, 805-6180 to text. We'll be right back. Hey, it's Kelly.
Yes, Kelly. Sorry, it's Deborah. I just slept in this morning. I didn't even hear any of the show. But I have an interesting story what happened about a dog yesterday.
Well, why don't we save it for the air, Deborah? It sounds like a topic of public interest.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay, I'll put you on hold. Well, it's 7:37, flying the friendly skies on the Kelly O'Connell Show. We've got a call, and it's from somebody you know and love, Deborah. And, Deborah, you've been on a crusade to fight back against people that are carrying their animals around like loaves of bread under their arm, like a running back, taking them in to the supermarket. The disgusting, flea-ridden, hair-dropping, defecating, peeing animals coming into the supermarket. Did I miss anything?
No, but the thing was, the dog actually wasn't in Starbucks.
Starbucks.
Pardon me?
No, I don't know. Was it drinking Starbucks out of a dish or what? No, it was outside.
No, the dog wasn't actually in the business.
I got you. It was outside.
It was inside. I just don't like Starbucks' reaction to what was happening. I rode down there after an appointment. I was out on the patio, the one by Sam's Club. That's Starbucks.
Yeah, the little one.
So anyhow, there was a yellow pickup truck. This dog was inside the cab part where the seats are. Then I seen a woman take the garbage out, and then all of a sudden I turned, and the dog was outside on the bed of the yellow pickup truck. And then on this silver thing, I guess where they keep tools in that, it was very hot. It was like 11 o'clock in the morning. It was kind of hot.
Did you scream like in Vertigo? Did you scream when you saw the animal?
No. So anyhow, I was kind of leery to go over because this dog was not leashed. And I asked the employee, I said, is that dog loose? And she said, yes. So I went inside and I made an announcement. Who has a black dog in a yellow vehicle? There is a leash fault. And this one guy with must be his favorite color, yellow shirt. He says, yes, I know. Thank you. He did nothing else. I start talking to these two people, mention your show, how we're talking about dog situations. And the management did nothing. They said, well, they can't do anything. So I talked to a supervisor. I called the code. Code said they couldn't do anything.
Deborah. I'm a little bit confused. The dog was not inside Starbucks, therefore the dog was outside of Starbucks. But where was the dog?
Yeah, it was in the back, in the bed of the vehicle.
Yeah,
and
but
the poor thing was
DeBorah.
Hot,
DeBorah.
Was trying to get down,
hold
and
on.
The guy wasn't
DeBorah.
Wasn't even in the visual place to see his
DeBorah.
Animal.
Put on your musketeers here for a second. Listen to me. Hold on a second. So the dog was having a humanitarian crisis.
I guess you could say that. The poor thing was probably too hot. It was out there for over 20 minutes because the people that were there says, well, you know, we're discussing. The poor thing's trying to get off to probably come to its owner because it was hot, probably hot and thirsty. So finally, he heard us talking. He could not see his vehicle where he was sitting, and he finally left. But that was at the time I was going to finally try to get a picture.
DeBorah,
talked to two employees.
DeBorah, you please listen if you call into the show. Turn on your miracle ear. Now,
okay. You
saw this dog in the back of this truck, and the dog was not tied down.
Right.
DeBorah, hold on a second. Chew on your tongue for a second. Could this dog have leapt out of the back of the truck?
Yeah, sure.
Why didn't it? If it was driven mad by thirst, why didn't it jump out?
I don't know, because I guess the owner finally left, and then the dog went through the window back into the vehicle, where the seats are.
So there was a cheerful reunion. All right, there was a tearful reunion with the dog and the owner. Okay, so what is your point out of the story?
Okay, well, then coincidentally, there was three people sitting out back on the patio, and I went back out there, and they were discussing about humaneness for animals and for human beings. We had a discussion, and it's going to be the interview and these people, the coalition, it's going to be in the bulletin on Friday. And I was discussing some things. And they said, well, there was another dog right next to the pickup truck.
DeBorah, we got to go here. I mean, this story is kind of like, I don't know. Anyway, thank you.
Well, they say it's a little on priority, these animals, poor things.
Well, thank you for calling and letting us know about this this story. Thank you. Have a good day. All right. I'm not sure what the point of that was. But anyway, Walt. All right, so I've got some texts here that I'll read them when we come back. But all right, so this I thought DeBorah was going to have another horror story of she was just reaching over to pick up a bag of bologna when she heard a snarl behind her.
You know, I wish people wouldn't leave dogs in the back, but I'm not sure it's worth calling out the 7th Cavalry over.
Well, she was about to take a picture and maybe send it into PETA.
Yeah.
In any event, so... All right, you got to work on your narrative style there, DeBorah. This should not be stream of consciousness storytelling. All right, so this story, do you think it's this story with this crash, Jasmine Miller, has changed anything in town?
No. What it has done for me is shine a light again at what we talked about earlier about the mental health system in this state and in this community specifically. And we are going through a huge transition right now with La Clinica taking over for La Frontera. But will that mean more money? Will that mean – I don't think so. I mean, I think they'll be more competent. I think they'll care more, which was the big complaint against La Frontera, a bunch of people from Arizona who didn't care about this community. But I still don't think – I think we're a long way from the resources that we need to really address that problem.
Okay, so there's a mental health crisis in this state, and it's illustrated by this wreck.
Well, yeah, and the handling of the wreck, and the fact that the judicial system seems incapable of dispensing justice.
All right, so what would, in your opinion, have been a better outcome?
Yeah, some kind of adjudication where she's in some kind of forced treatment at the very least for some period of time. I mean,
treatment for her, because one of the things that it said that she began to bounce up and down on her feet as if she were a ballerina, according to the cop, complaining of dry mouth and began to spit. And he saw her eyes fluttering, which gave him the indication she was on a marijuana high. But so drug treatment or mental health treatment or what?
I don't know. Maybe both. And that's another thing is you can't give them both. That's another thing I found out at this meeting is according to the way the state gives out the money, you can do one or you can do the other. But if you're a judge, you cannot send somebody for both of those treatments at the same time because that's too much for the system to handle.
All right. So during the examination, the report states that Miller attempted to bite the officer's ear after complaining about the tightness of the handcuffs. As I was checking the cuff for correct tightness, she, Miller, sat up and attempted to bite my ear. I could feel her breath on my ear, and she made a low, growling noise. Huh, maybe Deborah can get involved in this one, too. But in any event, we need to update this mental health system. But how would we do it? We're a poor state. How are we going to find the money?
Very good question.
Folks, let's take a break here. We're talking about this sensational case with Jasmine Miller, and apparently she's out free as a bird after almost killing three people, and people want to know why. I'm going to do some investigation on this case, and I'll report it tomorrow, the facts that I find out. But don't assume that the judge made a mistake.
I think that's correct.
Yeah, that it may have been the only choice that he had.
The system may have worked the way it's set up to work and still produced what I think is a very bad result.
The problem is the system. The problem is the mental health. And this is what I assume, Walt. This lady was crazy before she got in the car, right? Mm-hmm. Other people knew she was crazy.
Right.
She should have been adjudicated before that and gotten help. So
I agree.
Folks, we'll take a little break. 746, Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in, unless you've got a dumb story about dogs in the back of a truck. And I've got some text to read when we come back. Just kidding, Deborah. Anyway, we'll be right back. 805-6180 to text, 805-6180. Here with Walt Rubel. And so what other stuff is going on in the community?
Well, I wanted to jump in. I mean, those are the two big stories in the community, but I wanted to jump in just a little bit on what you were talking about the tail end of the last hour. The idea that racial relations have gotten worse under Obama.
Yeah.
And I think obviously that's true. Worse meaning, more clear, obvious division.
Did you accept my explanation that the people on the right are going to say that the president and his party or his group of people are race baiters, whereas the people on the left are going to say there was racism there all along, but we finally started to look at it?
No, I think both of those things are true.
Okay.
Yeah. But getting to the main point in terms of if that is true, and I accept the premise that it is, why is that true? Is it because of race baiting by the president, or are there other reasons for it? And in my opinion, you go back and you look at the Cleveland speech, the Jeremiah Wright speech that the president gave in Cleveland. And to me, that was his definitive statement on race. Now, you look at the policies and some of the things that have happened since then. Is it race baiting when he says of the young man, Tavon Martin.
Yeah.
When he says that would have been my son, I mean, is that race baiting? I don't know. I mean, to me, that's a level of empathy.
That's a good question. We got a call. Thanks for the call. All right. Folks, sorry. I don't want to break into Walt's description of this. So, all right. So you're doing an analysis. We do have the call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly. It's Mike.
Mike, do you remember when I asked you not to have the dogs barking into the phone?
There was a little fight going on. I'm sorry about that.
I understand that. And also, you got your teeth knocked out by your dogs. You should reconsider your priorities, in my opinion. But anyway, listen.
Well, I'm in pain.
Yeah, I realize. I'm sorry about that. Call my friend Sam Kane. if you're in pain. 526-5263. But
hey, Kelly?
Mike, listen, I don't – people complain to me all the time about the guy that calls up with dogs bang into the phone. Is there one – do you live in a one-room shack?
Well, Kelly, I just have a quick question for Walt.
Go ahead. Go ahead. In the – speaking of mentally incompetent, anyway, I just
– All right, so here's where I was going.
All right.
I think that the reason for this was driven by events that were beyond the president's control, starting with Ferguson and going from there. Black Lives Matter, that whole movement has sprung up, and there's no question that when people feel like racial divisions are worse now, that it's because of the protests in the street.
All right, but can't we move in a direction to make it better, or are we moving, in your opinion?
Yes. Yes, I do. I think the attention paid to Ferguson was a good thing in the end. Of all the people you could choose as your martyr, Michael Brown would not have been my choice. Tamir Rice, I think. But that is besides the point. I think that was almost symbolic at this point and has come to – it seemed like once the spotlight was shined on that, there was incident after incident after incident after incident.
But aren't other people going to say that it just stirred up a lot of unrest and really, I mean, now.
Well, absolutely, people will say that.
Baltimore, where you've got worst murder rates by far than before. And how are we, I mean, are we really dealing with the issues?
Yeah, Baltimore is probably the toughest of all of those cases because you have a situation, according to what I've heard, where police are incredibly demoralized. They feel like
they can't do their jobs.
They feel like they can't do their jobs, and they feel like, you know, screw it, I'm not going to do my job.
We got to take a break here. I got a few more lovely supporters to, a few ads. We'll be right back. And I think you have an announcement.
I do. A couple things I need to plug real quickly.
We'll be right back. All right, so we're here with Walt, and Walt, you had an announcement you wanted to make.
Yeah, just a couple things I needed to plug real quick. One is, you know, you asked the question, where are we going to get the money from for all this mental health? Well, one place we can look, we had a story in the Sun News last Sunday about all the millions of dollars that have been appropriated by the state for capital outlay projects, building projects, essentially, that are just stuck in the pipeline, that are not getting moved because of this incredibly inefficient system. And what I want to plug is the group New Mexico In Depth, who worked with us on that. Sandra Fish was the person who did all of the legwork on this, put together a database that is available on our website where you can go and you can track every project that has been passed from 2011 to 2014, and you can see the status of that project.
What's the website? Where is it?
LCSunNews.com.
Okay.
And then real quickly, on KRWG next week, I'm with Diana Alba and Fred Martino. We did a show on the municipal election talking to voters about what they were going to be looking for in the upcoming election. And that will air Thursday at 7 p.m., Saturday at 5 p.m., and Sunday at 11 a.m. KRWG-TV.
Fantastic. Congratulations.
Well, thanks. Thanks for letting me get that in.
Absolutely. Okay, we got a couple of texts. I agree with the caller. Why not have a man ask Megan's woman's question to keep it neutral? Lydia, black babies' lives matter. Lydia, you should get Deborah on the line with Mike. I think we'd have nuclear fission or fusion, whatever it's called. Okay, the driver was crazy and drunk and violated speed limit, and her license was just revoked. What? Did the issue of whether she is an alcoholic, no sentence to treatment, nothing outrageous. Another text. Somebody texts in these giant texts, but race relations are about as bad as I can remember since Rodney King days. It's because African-Americans know their man in the White House has done nothing. Get this jerk out of the White House except make their lives worse. They're showing their frustration through violence. I can't really blame them in a way. They waited all these years. All right. So anyway, I want to thank Walt Rubel for coming on the show today.
Yeah, enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was great. Thanks for tuning in to AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. If you're in pain, call Kane. Mike, call Kane. Sue your dogs for knocking your teeth out, 526-5263. And have a great day. We'll see you back in 22 hours. Kelly O'Connell Show. Ciao. Hey, it's Kelly. Who is this?